Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I'm going to play a lot of clips this evening. I got new evidence about Hitler escaping Germany after World War II and living the rest of his life out in Argentina. There's a couple investigators now that have brought forth some pretty convincing information on that. Secondly, there is supposedly a radioactive cloud that has been forming over Europe. It allegedly originated in Russia, and there's speculation it has to do with some kind of nuclear accident that occurred while some nuclear arms were being created. So I don't know how much of that is conclusive yet. Some of that is still up in the air. The third thing that I'm going to play clips about is what I would consider the least reliable. Supposedly, Marines have landed at Langley, Virginia, in some kind of military action against the CIA to stop a coup over Trump, supposedly. And this, I think, has some legs on it. And evidence coming out that we may see a war starting in the Middle East. And Dr. Steve Pachinik will be talking to Alex Jones about that. But you won't hear much more from me, I don't think, this evening. I'm just going to get these clips ready to go. I might go a little quiet for a second, but should be able to listen to some very interesting information about Hitler living the rest of his life in Argentina after World War II.
At the end of World War II, the world celebrated as news was released that Adolf Hitler and his new bride, Eva Braun, had committed suicide by cyanide and a bullet as Russian troops closed in on their underground bunker. Now, nearly 70 years later, two Israeli filmmakers are about to challenge that narrative head on. As the story goes, when the Russians reached Hitler's bunker, two charred corpses were found. They were believed to be the Nazi leader and his spouse. Seizing the moment, the American government quickly proclaimed the bodies were that of Hitler and Braun. The Russians then buried the bodies in an undisclosed location and locked away skull fragments that they claimed to be Hitler's and fabric from the blood-soaked sofa where the suicides occurred. The History Channel's program Mystery Quest dispatched a crew to Russia to open the archives for the first independent investigation in history. Their findings were shocking. The skull that was believed to be Hitler's was in fact that of a young woman. The revelation added gas to the fire that Hitler had actually escaped the bunker. In 1945, Joseph Stalin told President Truman that he believed Hitler was not dead. In 1952, Eisenhower was quoted as saying, "We have been unable to unearth one bit of tangible evidence of Hitler's death." Many people believe that Hitler escaped from Berlin. If this is true, then where did Hitler and Braun escape to? Our guest today will reveal his case and the facts that will soon be disclosed this year when his film is released to the world. His name is Noam Shalev. His film is titled Revealed, and it examines official FBI documents and recorded personal testimony of people who say they served Hitler after he arrived in Argentina on a German U-boat. Welcome to the show, Noam.
Thank you for having me.
Noam, as I just laid out some of the recent points shedding doubt on the official narrative, why have you taken it upon yourself to lay this case before the world?
Actually, in the beginning, I didn't want to take it upon myself. I was approached by a researcher who's working with me. His name is Pablo Veschler. And he said, "Listen, I read some amazing stuff coming from Argentina. And I never did any conspiracy theory before. All the films that I directed and produced are based on real facts, real people." And I said, why should we deal with that? And then I started reading and I realized that there's so much going on, so much information, so much was discussed back in 1945. The headlines of papers all over the world from summer 45 said, "Where is Hitler? Did he die? Did he really die in the bunker or did he escape?" And I decided that there is a story here and we have to check what's happening.
So what are the ramifications of this version of events to world history?
Just imagine that the most dangerous villain in world history, somebody who changed the history of the world in a way very few people did, managed to escape without punishment and lived maybe for years later on in another part of the world. Nobody's chasing him. Nobody's threatening him. It's quite unacceptable. See the wave of joy in America after the capture and killing of Bin Laden. And we're talking about Hitler. It's not even the same league. And yet, if he managed to escape without punishment, this is something that should be told.
Now, let's go to the actual facts of your investigation. What have you discovered to be the sequence of events that led Hitler to Argentina?
We know that the bunker in Berlin was bombarded by the Russians on April 30th, same day the troops went in. But 3 days earlier, on April 27, 1945, there was a strange order coming from the headquarters of the German Air Force. And the order was to take all available airplanes and to tell them to guard a very narrow aerial corridor between Berlin and Denmark. And it lacked any rationale at the time. Why would they do that in the very last days of the war? But they did it, and they safeguarded this corridor. And then we have a testimony of a pilot in the German Air Force. And he gave it on record in the Nuremberg tribunals after the war. And he said, yes, I took off from an improvised landing strip near the bunker. And I took with me Hitler and Eva Braun. And I flew them to Denmark, where I landed, and when they went to another place. And from there on, we have testimonies on what happened, on how Hitler boarded the U-boat, the German submarine. And after a few weeks in the ocean, he surfaced in South Argentina. And there are witnesses there to the arrival of this mysterious U-boat in the middle of the night. And after that, we get reports from the area of Bariloche in southern Argentina saying Hitler is here.
Now, the bunker and Berlin, they were surrounded by enemy forces. How could he possibly have removed himself from that bunker and escaped?
Only by taking off in a light airplane. And it is possible, and this avenue has been filmed. It is known to have been tested as a landing strip months before this actual escape from the bunker. And yes, a light plane can take off. The question was, would it survive the way to Denmark because of the many Allied airplanes in the air? But we believe that it did, and it arrived to Denmark. And from there, the way was quite easy because the Allied forces were not there at the time.
Now, shifting to the declassified FBI documents, what new evidence has been revealed from this material?
First of all, we know now that the FBI was very busy looking for rumors for information in Argentina. Now, we have to remember, we're talking about weeks after the end of the war in Germany. There's so much to do. And Argentina was not a front at the time. It wasn't really one of the more important areas where the FBI operated. And yet, several intelligence officers located in South Argentina are collecting information and sending dozens of reports to FBI headquarters in D.C. And they report what they heard, phone lines that they tapped, information that got from all kinds of informers and snitches. And they say in the beginning, in May and June, they talk about expectations among Germans in the Bariloche area that Hitler is going to arrive. And then July and on, or mid-July and on, they talk about where Hitler is, where he's going to, what people are saying about him. Now, all this information is sent to Washington, D.C. Most of the reports are answered personally by J. Edgar Hoover, director of FBI, who said, thank you for sending the information. We will investigate and we'll let you know if you need anything else. I don't think, and as far as we know today, nothing was done with it. Nothing serious was done with it. And yet, you know, given the events in Japan still going on at the time and the attempts to rebuild Europe and to begin getting acquainted with the Cold War, which was actually beginning at the time, we understand that Argentina was not top priority.
So the FBI simply dismissed the priority of investigating deeper into the documentation that they had, they were in possession of, that Hitler was actually in Argentina, and there were eyewitnesses to that.
at least we know that the FBI did not invest too many resources in that. And if it were a top priority, they would definitely send more intelligence officers, more analysts to Argentina to check what's happening on the ground.
Now, you interviewed many subjects for your film while you were in Argentina. Who were they? How did you locate them? How did you verify that their testimony was true? Individuals that served Hitler coffee in the hotel where he was staying. How did you find these individuals?
This is a very interesting story, and you're referring to a maid working in the Eden Hotel in the city of Cordoba in northern Argentina, where Hitler allegedly arrived to around 1947. And she's talking about the mysterious guest that was at the hotel. And before he arrived to the hotel, the staff was warned, nobody's talking to him, nobody's looking at him, don't ask him, don't answer him. And they didn't know who this person is. And she tells us, and this is after almost 60 years, she tells us, yeah, there was something familiar, but we were warned not to look at him and not to talk about him. So we tried to ignore until suddenly one of the drivers tells me, you know who it is, don't you? It's Hitler. And she found out that other people knew about it as well. And yes, she served him tea, actually. And she cleaned his room. There was no exchange of words. He never even said thank you. He just nodded his head. But this woman, we tried to cross-examine what she's saying and to interrogate her and to ask, you know, is it possible that it's somebody else? And then she told us that actually the portrait of Hitler in this hotel was on every wall. The hotel was owned by a family that was a great supporter of Hitler even before he became the Nazi Führer. And she told us about the moment she realized, hey, that's the guest, that's the one from the walls. We collaborated every possible fact, she said, the time of employment, her job, other people she worked with. And we did the same with all other eyewitnesses, because we're talking to people who were simple workers at the time, a maid in the hotel, a carpenter, a driver. They had no incentive to come and start lying after so many years. We obviously did not pay anyone for giving us an eyewitness report. No, we were asked to. But these people came and answered our questions, said, yes, that's the man. He was here.
All right, Noam, let's go to the clip of the maid who served Hitler tea in Argentina.
Tuvo Hitler ahí, sí. Tuvo tres días. Eso yo sí. Eso yo, porque vimos los choferes y todo. Padre Mónica también. Pero nosotros teníamos que callarlo la boca. O perdíamos el trabajo. Y después lo agarré a Luis yo y le dio Chilvi. Callate, me dice, no digas nada. Y si usted, ahí había foto de él. Y después, bueno, por más que no tenga video.
Fascinating. Now, Noam, how did you locate this woman?
We got a lot of assistance from a historian working in Argentina. His name is Patrick Burnside, and he published a few books about the Hitler arrival in Argentina and the whole story with the German U-boats, the submarines that arrived to Argentina. The man is a walking fountain of knowledge. He has been digging the Argentinian archives since they were open to the public years ago. He collected a lot of information and a lot of eyewitness reports, and he helped us find this woman and other eyewitnesses from the time, specifically from the late 40s and very early 50s.
Now, how has the Argentinian government been receptive of this type of information and people who are seeking facts in their country to Hitler's residence and death and burial even?
A few years ago, the Argentinian archives, which have been locked since 1945, have been open to the public. There is a lot to go there. These archives, some of them have never been cataloged, so we have to go one piece of paper after the other. But we found out amazing stories over there, stories that you know, we can follow them up by dozens of documentaries. For instance, on the great efforts invested by the German government before and during the Second World War to find uranium in Argentina in order to use it for the nuclear project then in development in Germany. We learned about people who were in the Argentinian establishment at the time, but were actually working for the Nazis. And we learned about this thriving German colony in South Argentina and later on in North Argentina, a lot of people, thousands and thousands of people, many of them Nazis, arriving from Germany to safe haven in Argentina. And this is where they stayed unharmed during the war, usually unharmed in the very few years after the war. In the last decade, things are coming out and documents are released. And there's such a treasure of facts and documents there that, it's going to take a few years until historians will go over everything and find out everything that happened these years.
Now, what about documentation that has been uncovered that Hitler actually had children who were living with him in Argentina and who are still alive today?
We heard about it and we didn't find anything that can verify that, even a shred of evidence for that. By the way, Eva Braun, that Hitler's mistress who married him in the bunker, she left Germany with him. We have zero eyewitness reports, zero information about her whereabouts in Argentina. She just vanished from the surface of the earth, and Hitler is always reported as being alone.
Now, the skull that was analyzed by the History Channel, it was the Russians believed, and they stated that it was actually Hitler's skull. They believed it was Hitler's skull. It had a bullet hole in the skull, but the genetic analysis that the History Channel did revealed that it was actually that of a woman. What's your thoughts on that? Could it have been Eva's skull, perhaps?
I think that from a distance of 7 decades, we will never know the truth. And this is what led me in this investigation from the beginning. We can present a theory. We can establish it with as much information as we have, but we will never be able to watch live what happened in 1945 in the bunker or later on in Argentina. I don't think there is a major cover-up in place. I don't think that the Americans and the Soviets, the Russians, who hardly spoke at the time after the war, collaborated in this attempt. I don't think that there is anything here except for a great feeling of fatigue at the end of the war on all sides. And everybody's focusing on other places. And just imagine the American government or the Russian government, weeks and months after the war, they have so many challenges ahead of them. They have so many problems to deal with. Suddenly, you have to send people to Argentina to follow this theory that if it exists and if it's right, it will not look good to anyone. So I figure out that the lack of investigative attempt in the months after the war, I understand it. I can understand even the Russians covering up immediately after the war or after that in order not to look stupid. They called Hitler and what, they lost him? I don't think it's something that people tried to hide. I think it was somehow hidden. Nobody wanted to lose face at this very stage of the war, and that's what caused it.
So what do you believe is the most compelling piece of evidence in your investigation that Hitler and Braun escaped the bunker?
I think that the testimony given in the Nuremberg trial of this German Air Force pilot is amazing. He talked about it in detail. He described the facial gestures of Hitler. When you add that to the eyewitness reports from Argentina, and really these are people who we sat with for hours and asked again and again, you have to believe them. You know, there's no reason why somebody would lie to you. There's no reason why somebody would invent such a story. And so many facts added to it, beginning with the FBI report and ending with the Argentinian document. So many facts, so many stories connected to it. I mean, altogether, you look at it and you say, hey, you know, the evidence supporting our theory is no less significant or convincing than the evidence that everybody believed in the last 70 or something years.
Now, Noam, before we get into the topic of his Parkinson's and the drug use and the longevity of Hitler's life in post-Germany, living in Argentina, could the German U-boats have still been in the Atlantic on maneuvers for Germany when they were spotted and just mistaken as transporting Adolf Hitler to Argentina?
You know, actually, it's a great number, but at the end of the war, on the day Germany surrendered, 261 German submarines missing. Nobody knew where they are. They were somewhere in the world oceans. Now, most of them were discovered later. Either they were just drowned by the captains who surrendered or who escaped. Two of them went to Argentina and officially surrendered to the Argentina Navy in the port of Mar del Plata in South Argentina. What we know is that Hitler left in a group of either two or three submarines.
There's documentation of German submarines surrendering to the Argentinian Navy. Now, are those the same U-boats that carried Hitler?
No. Hitler was using a later model, actually the first submarine of the latest model that was manufactured by Germany. And he arrived later. Those submarines surrendered in the first week of July. We believe that Hitler arrived a week or 10 days after that to another port. His U-boat approached the sea, and from the U-boat, they took small boats to the sea, where there was a large group of both horses, carriages, and jeeps waiting for them over there. And this whole convoy left toward the city of Bariloche.
So let's talk about that. They moved to his new residence. He had Parkinson's disease, and he was allegedly a heavy drug user. How long could he possibly have lived in Argentina? What do you believe that his living conditions were? His quality of life, if you will, and his ultimate death.
We spoke to medical experts, and given the fact that we know that Hitler had Parkinson's disease and he had a great dependency on painkillers and other kind of medications, it is not likely that he lived for 20 years after that. Even 10 years would be a great success, and it depends on the quality of the medical treatment he got at the time. And we have to assume that Hitler was not somebody who can go to Argentina to the best medical facility and check in. Everything will have to be done very secretly. But the medical experts that we spoke to said that a few years, it's possible. Not a great quality of living. Probably wouldn't be able to move from his bed in the last years. And what we know is that until 1954, we get information. In 1954, almost everything stops, and we get just hints in the end of the 50s, beginning of the 60s, and some people are claiming that he lived all the way until 1964, which I think is quite impossible. It's 19 years after the war, but most likely he stayed alive until 1954. Nobody knows how he died, where his body is. I mean, we'll be very glad to know this information, but I guess we'll never find out.
Now, where did he live? Where did he allegedly live when he was in Argentina?
In the beginning, 1945 to 1947, he lived in the Bariloche area. The city of Bariloche, which until today is quite German in nature. You can sit in a cafe over there and people are speaking German in the tables, even third generation Germans. Near it and around it, there are many farms. We're talking about Texas-sized farms, huge farms. And at the time, until actually late in the 1980s, these farms were not admitting anyone. You couldn't go in, even with the police or with the army or with the secret services. There were closed compounds surrounded by wire fences. Nobody could go in. You could disappear inside, and nobody would know about you. And we know about two such farms where Hitler took refuge in the first months in Argentina. Then in 1947, or from 1947 to 1948, we hear testimonies from the city of Cordoba in northern Argentina, specifically from the Eden Hotel, where this maid we discussed was employed, and which was the center of the Nazi support groups before and during the war. And we get a lot of hints from Cordoba until the end of the 40s, and then it's coming from both the north and the south, Cordoba area and Bariloche area, and these are areas that were primarily very supportive of the Nazis during the war and very supportive by Germans after the war.
So were you able to gain access to any of these farm compounds?
We did. First time was not that successful because we tried to reach one of the farm actually by a boat through a lake. And when we were like 100, 150 yards from the coast, we had two people with machine guns who explain without sound what they're planning to do, and we had to go back. And then we made it. We made it through a side entrance to one of the farms, filmed inside, filmed one of the cabins that we have information that Hitler lived between 1945 and 1947. As far as the other farm, we filmed it only from the air. We could not lay foot on the ground.
Are these compounds still being protected then? They're still protecting the information that Adolf Hitler resided there?
They're not talking to anyone. They never did. All attempts of journalists during the time to contact them, nobody answered. These are very large real estate properties that are controlled by private families. They've been like that for hundreds of years, and nobody gets inside. It's like an autonomous area inside Argentina. Nobody deals with them.
So is it believed that, so you have footage then inside one of the cabins that you were tipped off that Adolf Hitler actually lived in. When you were in the cabin, what did you discover?
From a distance of so many years, it's just, you know, an empty cabin, quite derelict, simple, humble. It's not a place for a chancellor or a Führer to live. Everything in Argentina was very basic at the time. Today, Argentina is a greatly advanced country, not at the time, not in 1945. Living conditions were minimal, and so was the farm. It looked like a place where somebody would hide in, but nobody would choose to live in. It's totally desolated without anything, you know, within 50, 60 miles around it.
So given the Parkinson's disease, as well as the advancement of society and technology in Argentina at the time, is it safe to say that he would have lived a very destitute life in a forest in Argentina?
Well, the first 2 years, definitely. He lived in destitute. He lived in total secrecy. Very few people knew about him, where he is. Only those who were the inner circle, who supported him, who provided him with probably money, with transportation to go from one place to another, most likely with medical help. I don't think he would have chosen to live in a place like that, but, you know, for Hitler, after the war, the only place he could survive was a place where nobody knew where he is and nobody could come in and get him.
It's been almost 70 years since the end of the war. Why do you think that people are interested in this topic and would be interested in your film?
You know, when we're dealing with a person who broke the world record in cruelty, in ideology which today we can't even understand how cruel it was, with trying to annihilate another people, with all the damages that he's done, and we know in the end the good guys won, but what happened to the bad guy? Did he disappear? Just vanished from the face of the earth? I think we deserve to know the truth, and I think at this time, yes, 70 years after the fact, we need a strong effort by states, not by persons, not by academic researchers who invest their time, but a real investment of efforts in order to find out what really happened there. And you know what? I think everybody would like that. The Americans, definitely, the Russians, the British, and yes, the Germans as well. I mean, we want to know the truth. We got to the age of information where the truth should be out there. So let's get it out. That's what we're trying to do.
Now, when and where can people watch your film? It's set for release this year, 2014.
Correct. We are planning another filming expedition in Argentina in September, October, and right after that to finish editing. Next year, 2015, is the 70th anniversary to the surrender of Germany, to the end of the war, and we think it's the perfect day to release the film, which will be either by Christmas this year or the beginning of the new year. A year from now, it will be out there. And, you know, unlike other documentary films that we produce, this one is not attached to any TV channel yet. We decided to keep to the creative liberty as long as we can in order not to compromise on anything, on any fact, on any story. We want to vet everything. We want to check everything is correct. And until now, all the work was done by our own financial means. We are getting contacts from all over the world from people who would like to take part in this interesting project, would like to sponsor, would like to support. And we are talking to all of them. And hopefully by the end of the year, we're going to have a finished film, around 90 minutes, and everybody will be able to watch it.
charred beyond recognition. These were the supposed bodies of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun. A few months later, new testimonials emerged from people who admit to seeing Hitler 1,000 kilometers away from Europe, in South America, Argentina. Was Hitler's suicide faked? Perhaps Hitler organized a way to flee Europe. Maybe Adolf Hitler lived a very quiet life in South America until his death in 1965. Argentina, La Falda, in a province, Córdoba. Pioneers who came here in the end of 1800 built this village. One of the most significant places of the provinces was the Eden Hotel, a beautiful site with international prestige.
En esa época, el Eden Hotel recibió a reyes, presidentes, Einstein. Era conocido internacionalmente por el prestigio que tenía.
La Falda era un búnker nazi, eso era obvio. Cada vez que Alemania ganaba algún país o tenía alguna victoria, había fiesta, y aparte que se festejaba fuertemente en el Hotel Eden.
The hotel owners were Walter and Ida Eichhorn. They were supporters of the Nationalist Socialist Party in Germany and personal friends of Adolf Hitler.
Esta gente se carteaba con el Führer. Y periódicamente esta gente viajaba a Alemania. Por lo menos 2 veces al año iba a Alemania. ¿A qué iban? No le podría decir. Hay gente que dice que iban a darle dinero para la campaña.
No hay ninguna persona que haya sido más allegada y afín a Hitler que ellos dos. O sea, había una relación ahí muy, muy loca, o sea, muy, muy profunda, y a mí no me cabe ninguna duda que Hitler pudo llegar a donde llegó gracias al apoyo de ellos.
Hitler le mandó de regalo un Mercedes-Benz, que fue el primer Mercedes-Benz que vino a la Argentina. Un regalo personal de Adolfo Hitler a la señora Ida Eichhorn.
May 1945, the end of World War II, the end of the Third Reich. Europe is free again. The Allies publish an official declaration that they found the bodies of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun. Patrick Burnside, researcher and author of the book Hitler Escapes, has posed many questions about the investigation of Hitler's death.
Cualquier situación policial de un evento donde hay un suicidio, donde hay una muerte, se investiga. En este caso no se investigó. Se investigó menos de cualquier evento de cualquier nación, de cualquier policía del mundo. O sea, no se abrieron un expediente, se encargó un jovencito que en su época fue el mayor Trevor Roper, que era un recién neolaureado en historia, de investigar bonariamente la muerte de Hitler, porque de todo lado se decía que Hitler dijo la suya.
In a meeting between Stalin and American Secretary of State James Burns a few weeks later after the war ended, Stalin said, almost certainly, Hitler escaped to Argentina. In the meantime, President Roosevelt formed a unit of the FBI to investigate Hitler's whereabouts.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. Third phase of the moon. We just got a breaking news report of something strange over Utah. Take a look.
What the?
Back. Open the mountain. Backyard.
I am.
Holy, something just blew.
Bam. Did you see that? Could this be what just created this phenomenon over the skies over Utah? This just happened November 22nd, 2017. Breaking news. This is happening big time, and we're hearing the reactions of the people behind what they just experienced. This happened 7:16 p.m. tonight. Anybody know? Anybody's been in this area? You contact us, Third Phase Moon, and start giving us your video. Have you seen this? Is this really happening? We're getting information that this was an event that happened tonight, or is this something out of this world? Is this something otherworldly or something CERN's creating? You hear the dogs in the background. They seem to be aware of what's going on. That was huge. Listen to this guy. He knows that something sketchy just went down, and he says he needs to get out of here. This is crazy footage.
I am. Holy, something just blew. Holy. Looks like I'm going home early tonight.
Oh. Some people are actually speculating, could these lights in the sky, these CERN projections, be causing these explosions on the ground? Did we just witness that? All right, we're taking a look and we're finding out. This is coming in from That Is Impossible YouTube channel. We're seeing if this is a legitimate report. We're leaving the link below. Take a look for yourself. All right, we're standing by in Hawaii. This is breaking news. We want to find out what just happened in Utah. Subscribe. We'll see you again very soon.
Russia sparks nuclear alert as radioactive cloud spreads over Europe. French nuclear experts detected traces of ruthenium-106 in the air and three monitoring stations as the cloud engulfed the continent. The substance, a radioactive nuclide which is only produced when atoms are split in a nuclear reactor, was also found in Germany, Austria, Switzerland and Italy. One French official stressed that it is definitely not normal. The country's Nuclear Safety Institute, IRSN, said it could not pinpoint the exact location of the release of the radioactive cloud, which was first detected at the end of September, but weather patterns suggest it came from somewhere south of the Ural Mountains. This could indicate the plant is in either Russia or perhaps over the border in Kazakhstan. IRSN Director Jean-Marc Perez confirmed the substance could not have occurred naturally. The news comes just a week after the UK was struck by radiation fog, with the Met Office issuing an alert.
Responses. They're voting for peace on planet Earth if they vote for Trump. But if they vote for Hillary, it's war.
We came, we saw, he died.
With her, you'll end up in World War III.
I want the Iranians to know that if I'm the president, we will attack Iran.
Right now, Senator, for us to control all of the airspace in Syria would require us to go to war against Syria and Russia.
The U.S. military has just raised the threat level to DEFCON 2. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton is still threatening Russia with military action following unconfirmed reports of further hacking. It's like she's not even concerned about the repercussions.
Of course not, because she's...
Well, that's really loud noise.
All right, looks like we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. We'll try to get Leanne back on in a few minutes.
When the president gives the order, it must be followed.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. It is Friday night. We are live. This is a special emergency transmission. As I saw this information come in this afternoon and did about 2 hours of research on it, I realized that I had to come in tonight at 6 o'clock, just about 37 minutes ago, and have the crew stay here late to put out an emergency transmission over Infowars.com. Now, the little intro piece you saw was from over a year ago, back during the election, looking at what many analysts believed would be a possible future if Hillary was elected, promising nuclear war with Iran, Russia, and others. But a bigger nuclear threat that we know is a clear and present danger is the 460-plus energy-producing reactors and hundreds of other research reactors, as well as nuclear submarines and other secretive projects, close to 1,000, it's estimated, nuclear reactors that are on average 36 years old.
Breaking news, massive radioactive cloud contaminates at least 28 countries, and authorities say, don't worry about it, nothing to see here, go back to your regular consumer lifestyle. The European authorities are providing new details about a mysterious cloud of radioactive material that is not from nature. It is the isotope ruthenium-106. Time ruthenium was discovered was back in the Chernobyl disaster. Yes, that's right. But you know what, folks? Nothing to see here. No worries. Everything's going to be just fine because the authorities say so. Now, the radiation levels have been fluctuating out here in San Antonio from 0.07 up to 0.16. 1.6 is higher than it should be out here in the Texas area for sure. Now, if you go to this article from NPR, read all about it, NPR. I'll leave the link in the video description box. Let me just give you a quick excerpt. European authorities, I already read that, the monitors in Italy were the first to detect radioactive isotope ruthenium-106 October 3rd, according to a new report by France's Radio Protection and Nuclear Safety Institute, known as IRSN. So far, a total of 28 European countries saw the radioactive cloud. It's somewhere in South Russia, he says, likely between the Volga River and the Ural Mountains. I'll show you that location in a moment, with the map that shows the data. Now, authorities say the amount of material seen in Europe, it was small. It was a very low level of radioactivity, and it poses no problems for health and the environment in Europe.
We'll see what happens. Kelly's getting better and better. About stuff, and I think what I've been told is kind of woken up to what's going on and has gotten more hardcore. Maybe he got his sea legs. But I want to get into all this with Dr. Pechenik. Also, Congressman from Florida, Gates, says that basically they're trying a coup against the president and shopping a coup against the president up there on Capitol Hill. We'll play that clip coming up. So, Doc, there's a big waterfront to cover here, but what should we tackle first?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, but you and I can disagree and we'll always be friends. The real big issue and why I can't go on the internet is I'm being hacked. Like you, I too am being hacked. Google demonetized me, and the Israelis and some Americans understand what I'm about to tell you, and they're not happy about it. What I'm about to say, and I'm cutting to the chase, is that there's going to be a war in Lebanon between Hezbollah and the Israeli army. I predicted it months ago. Unfortunately, it's coming true. Once again, that incompetent young man from the White House, Jared Kushner, went over to Saudi Arabia, talked to another incompetent young man named Mohammed bin Salman, who's never been in the army, created a war 2 years ago with Yemen against the Houthis. And because Saudi Arabia is surrounded by Shiite Iran, and they lost. And because 3 weeks ago, I couldn't even announce on your show that Syria would beat our troops and beat ISIS. And so what's happening is there's a lot of distraction going on the domestic side in order for you and me to avoid what the real issue is, and that is Lebanon will be put into play. And once again, Israel will probably attack Hezbollah, while the head of Hezbollah, whom I have known about, and I've worked against Hezbollah, and I worked with Hezbollah, is going to fight the Israeli army. And this is what they don't want me to say to you. That's why I can't go on the internet. That's why they won't allow me to publish a lot of things. But they clearly signaled that they're going to war with Iran.
Well, sure, let me be clear, and I'm glad we got you on. They're like picking people up that are guests on the show now, the FBI is. And I know you've been called in to federal court as well about the show, but this is getting serious.
Yes, that's correct. The FBI and I do not get along because from the very day that I had to deal with the FBI in the Hanafi Muslim episode where 150 hostages were taken hostage in three different buildings, the FBI nested up so badly that I was brought in. I was sworn in by the prosecutor, Earl Silbert. I took it over, and then I said to the FBI, you had a bad behavioral profile. You didn't know what you're doing. You couldn't rappel from the helicopter. You were not any good. You're incompetent. Since that day, they know exactly how I feel about them. I've said you were created by a cross-dresser who was a manipulator and a sick individual, and it continued through Mueller and the 9/11 issue, and the FBI got pissed because I said you're incompetent.
Well, Dr. Pacific, this is important. Let's get into the civil war in Islam and all the different factions and the Sunnis and the Shiites and what's really happening in Saudi Arabia, because that is the real reason we got you on. What's happening in Saudi Arabia? Is it spilling over into America? Because that's the info I have, is that Vegas and other events are spillovers of this whole Saudi situation. We'll be right back with Dr. Steve Pacinic on the coming war he says is about to take place. So we've got this Prince bin Salman and the new king that are in charge over in Saudi Arabia. Trump goes over there to make deals. You got Kushner running around the middle of it. And all I want is stability and peace. But let's talk about, from Dr. Steve Pacinic's sources, and of course he's worked for different agencies and the State Department and best-selling author with Tom Clancy and a lot of other things under his belt. He's given us a lot of good information over the years. What's currently happening? I mean, they're admitting that there's about to be a new war in the Middle East, and that all these machinations are going on, and that we see a lot of the older line globalist connections kind of being severed. We see them trying to modernize in some ways. I mean, what are the positive areas about the new people in charge? And then what's negative, and what's really behind the helicopters blowing up and the firefights? And I mean, reducing this down, what's currently happening in the Middle East that they don't want in our news?
That's right. What they don't want in the news is the fact, number one, we lost the war in Syria. We had spent trillions of dollars. Obama had sent over $500 billion, or moderate, you know, terrorists. It was a total nonsense created by the CIA, Panetta, Petraeus, and all the nonsense in the war in Syria. Syria eventually won. That means Russia, Iran, and Syria were the dominant powers. Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Israel lost. In turn, what they're doing right now is that the young prince, who was really incompetent and started a war in Yemen against Iranians supporting the Houthi, his name is Mohammed Salman, as you said. But the key person here is a name called Harari. I knew his father. He's the son, but he's the president of Lebanon. The Harari family was always beholden to Saudi Arabia. So the young prince called him back to Saudi Arabia because Harari has a Lebanese passport and a Saudi passport. But it's a very bad sign for Harari to remain in Saudi Arabia because basically he's held hostage. What that means, in effect, is that Saudi Arabia and Israel wants to designate all of Lebanon as Hezbollah in power country, and that's not true. You have Falangists, you have Shiites, you have Sunni, you have Druze. It's a very complicated area. When the Syrians were in there, they were able to maintain peace. But now Saudi Arabia is surrounded by Syria, which they lost to Iran. You have Iraq, where we lost it to Iran. Saudi Arabia is on the eastern
border. I understand.
Border.
If you look at this geopolitically under Obama and what's happened in the last 8 years, we have absolutely lost the Middle East. But some would argue that was a strategy of destabilization and globalists selling out the United States, because you and I were talking 8-9 years ago about how this was destroying, you know, U.S. dominance and also putting bad people in charge. So how can we see what's happening and then just say they're incompetent? I mean, this was done on purpose. They funded the Arab Spring.
Correct. Well, because we're not putting in jail the Mueller's, the Hillary Clinton's, the warmongers, the people in the CIA.
Sure. So what's about to happen as this war escalates?
What's about to happen now is what? But Bibi Netanyahu has just been indicted. He, his wife, all of his friends, all of his cabinet have been indicted by the Israeli judicial system, basically saying you're so corrupt. You've got internal problems in Israel. You got internal problems in Saudi Arabia and Lebanon. What Israel is going to do is attack with the permission of America, because for the first time we announced, and nobody's heard it, a full-time base in Israel with American weapons, meaning we have missile systems and airplanes there. We never had that before, and we kept that quiet. But for the first time, it was never covered in the newspapers. We publicly announced we are with Israel, and we will fight whomever Israel fights. Now, Israel forgets that in 2006, Bibi again incompetently went into southern Lebanon to attack Hezbollah, and he failed. It was a war that was supposed to take over for 3 days. I found out.
Sure. Hezbollah was dug in and had light anti-tank weapons and took out their...
Exactly. And they took out the equivalent of what we consider in America at a 30-to-1 ratio. In other words, every Israeli soldier is the equivalent to 30 Americans in number. They took out about 35,000 dead Israeli soldiers in equivalent numbers. And it was a failure. And once again, Bibi's going to go in there, and the Israeli government's going to mobilize the IDF, and they will fail again. This time, Hezbollah is fully armed. And more importantly, the fighters are part of the Lebanese army. They're no longer terrorists. It's nonsense to consider them terrorists.
Well, the bigger issue is now, as you said, those corridors have been open now with the ongoing wars in that area. And so the Iranians have brought in their Revolutionary Guard and heavier weapons. Reportedly, so this could get really, really bad fast.
It's going to get nasty, and it's not only going to get nasty, it has no legitimacy on our part. We have no national security interest in the Middle East with regard to Iran. Iran has done nothing to us.
Well, let me ask you this. Who do you think is advising? You really think Trump is listening to Kushner?
Yes, no question about it.
Well, I've learned... No, in the last couple of months, Trump's really turned on Kushner. And I don't like even getting in the middle of this. I don't even like knowing this stuff. But you see it in the news now. But I knew months ago that Trump is very angry at Kushner over.
He may be. I have no qualms about that. But what I'm saying to you, and you're right on many things, but Roger Stone said this well into 2 months ago, that there would be an impending war in the Middle East. He never elaborated. Now, what I'm saying when I came back on, number one, they want to make sure I don't get on the internet or video. This is not by accident. This all happens intent.
No, I understand.
Two,
well, then let me ask you this. We'll come back to the next segment. You can talk about whatever you want.
Yes.
What do you make of blowback and information on Vegas and this mental patient tried to kill his command? They put him in a mental institution. He escapes. They don't file the paperwork that he's not allowed to own a firearm. I mean, this whole thing smells.
Yeah, but this is where you and I may differ. It, again, has the footprints and the heavy footprints of the FBI all over it, because every time you look at one of their profiles, it's the same dynamic with Sandy Hook. The guy was mentally ill, he escaped, and then they blow up the building and make sure there's nothing left. This is the incompetency of what I consider to be a Stasi agent.
Sure. What do you make of the Sandy Hook, Adam Lanza documents the FBI released?
It was nonsense. If they had to overcome what I was saying and you were saying, because I knew very well that the psychiatrist whom they hired at Yale was just paid off.
I know, but it's so in the new documents that Lanza was working with the CIA.
Oh, no, it's nonsense. The whole thing was nonsense. And what it shows to you is that we're wasting.
Are you saying the FBI stuck that in there? Are you saying the FBI stuck?
I'm sorry?
You understand the documents the FBI released, they say Lanza was visited by the CIA and recruited by him. Is that the FBI sticking that in there to go after the CIA?
The FBI has it. Let me put it this way. The FBI is a totally corrupt, dysfunctional organization created by a cross-dresser homosexual who tried to manipulate presidents whom I worked with and was detested by Nixon, by many others in the system. What the FBI is now is a dysfunctional organization, as personified last night, where the head of counterterrorism was found drunk.
Let's talk about Mueller. Going back to Dr. Steve Pachinik, psychiatrist, medical doctor, psychological warfare guy, done a lot of stuff, run operations, overturned governments, you name it. And
until you get the truth on the table, no matter how ugly it is, you're not in a position to deal with it. That is in direct opposition to what the deep state wants. The deep state wants lies, such as the 935 lies that took us to war in Iraq, such as the lies that are being told right now by Zionist Israel in order to get the U.S. government to declare war no later than February of 2018. So war in the Middle East, in my view, is going to happen unless Donald Trump defeats the deep state, including the gutting of the Zionist control of the U.S. Congress. You cannot understate the information war that has been waged against American values and American sovereignty.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. There is a lot going down right now. I'm hearing that there's over 2,500 indictments. I'm really hoping it's towards the corruption that's going on in Washington. That's what I'm hearing. And it's absolutely unheard of, history-making, the number of indictments that are going down. There's a lot going on around the world. I'm bringing Robert David Steele back to inform us on what he knows about what's going on. As you know, he is the most well-read past CIA agent on the planet. He's the number one reviewer of nonfiction on Amazon. He has contacts all over the world with very bright, well-researched, university-level, department, state-level people, and he's getting contacts all the time. And so I love bringing him on and hearing what he has to say about the latest that's going on, not only with the indictments, but also with what's heating up in the Middle East. And then we also talk about solutions for this country. We need to have a lot more transparency. Our education needs to be reformed. People need to be educated with the truth. Right now, there are so many ignorant people. He once said to me that the average taxi cab driver in France is more educated than a graduate level person here in this country. And unfortunately, I think that's true just because so much of the truth is hidden from the people. So that means we need major reform on getting information out to the people. So let's get now into that interview with Robert David Steele. Hi, Robert. Welcome back to the program.
Always a pleasure. You run the best program I know of in terms of quality and interesting people.
Thank you very much. I try. It's a passion. Let's get into why you are doing this, because you are getting targeted. You're putting yourself out there. Your website has been hacked and blocked. You have trolls that are constantly annoying you. So what is driving you?
Oh, it's not just annoying me. They're defaming me.
I know.
They're libeling me, and they're committing actionable crimes.
So what is driving you? What is your passion behind doing this?
Well, my passion is the truth, and I consider myself our country's first 21st century intelligence officer. As a former spy, as someone who worked in counterintelligence and information technology and also future satellites planning, as someone with 8 books critical of the U.S. intelligence community, as someone who created the Marine Corps intelligence activity and is also the top Amazon reviewer for nonfiction, I'm about putting the truth on the table. I was deeply inspired by a guy named Sealer, Bob Sealer, the CEO in New York, whose phrase is, until you get the truth on the table, no matter how ugly it is, you're not in a position to deal with it. So I'm all about truth, transparency, and trust. And that's why the last book I wrote, The Open Source Everything Manifesto, was subtitled Transparency, Truth, and Trust. Now, that is in direct opposition to what the deep state wants. The deep state wants lies, such as the 935 lies that took us to war in Iraq, such as the lies that are being told right now by Zionist Israel in order to get the U.S. government to declare war no later than February of 2018. So bottom line, I'm about the truth. I don't tell lies. I don't make up information, and I cannot be stopped. I am not suicidal, but I welcome an opportunity to die for my country.
Well, that's very noble, and I really...
No, it's not noble. I just don't know it.
Well, at what point, you know, at what point is it that it's not the right, you know, it's the right thing to do? And I say this too, is that what else am I going to do? People are out there dying for their country. So why would I not put my career on the line and not put my life on the line doing what's right and getting the truth out there?
Doing what's right is very important. In fact, I had a wonderful breakfast meeting yesterday with a cabinet level official under Ronald Reagan. We've been friends for some time now. And he told me that in his judgment, Trump's biggest supporters against Israel and against lies are the veterans. We have tens of millions of veterans who understand that they were screwed by lies and that all of the hardships and all of the lost limbs and all of the traumatic depressions and all of the suicides, 22 suicides a day, all of this is because the deep state sent us to war on the basis of lies to make profit for the banks.
Well, and they know more. They know more than anyone else because, by the way, that was only 32 states reporting with the 22 a day, and there's more losses than we lost in World War One and in Vietnam. So they know if you count suicides as combat losses. They know.
Yes, I agree. And in fact, Christopher Hedges has written a good book on Wages of Revolt. And he makes the point that the 1% falls when law enforcement and the military decide to no longer defend the 1% against the 99%. We're there.
Well, that's great. Well, let's talk about that because there are reports that sealed indictments have reached over 1,400 now, which is excellent.
I'm hearing 2,500, but yes, it's a lot.
That's better. What do you know about this? Because are they targeting gang members and illegal immigrants, or are they really going after the real deal, the traffickers, the children molesters, the
smut? Sarah, I'm by the Trump team, but I am privy to the letter that William Binney and I sent to Jeff Sessions through one of his neighbors in Alabama, CEO. And we know the letter was delivered, and we basically gave Sessions exactly how to tap into the 99% of the NSA data that has not been processed. Up to recently, NSA has been part of the deep state. It has not been part of saving us all from the deep state. We gave Jeff Sessions what he needed to know, and a copy went to Donald Trump, what he needed to know to get into the NSA database, which has every email and every cell phone for at least the last decade across this country. Now, you saw the Saudi purge recently. I'm very sure that was based in part on NSA data that was harvested and provided to Saudi Arabia. I mean, I'm thrilled that the two most evil princes in Saudi Arabia have gone down. And frankly, I hope the Saudi king kills them. Because guys like that, if they're left alive, they become a cancer that comes back to haunt you. I believe that Donald Trump now has the name of every traitor, agent of a foreign power, starting with people who have betrayed the Constitution in favor of Israel and Saudi Arabia. I believe that Donald Trump has the name, date, email, cell phones, connections, the visualized network of the entire 1% pedophilia satanic network. I'm not just talking to kidnap and sodomize children. I'm talking to people who kill children and then have them disposed of in New Jersey incinerators. Okay? This is huge. Bottom line here is that while NSA violated the Constitution and violated all possible regulations and went far outside the rule of law in order to capture 100% of the emails and the cell phones that have been made in the United States for the last decade, that has turned out to be a gift from heaven. In my judgment, we now have within the Department of Justice, within a very special presidential task force, we now have every name. Oh, I wrote a letter to James Comey. saying. You really need to focus on four big ones: pedophilia, terrorism, election fraud, and charity fraud. I think we now have it all. And I pray to God that Donald Trump uses that information not to wreak vindictive justice, but to neutralize all of these people. I'm huge on truth and reconciliation. I have no problem with the Rothschilds being rich for the rest of eternity. I do have a problem with central banks controlled by the Rothschilds. So that ends today.
Well, and also, we, like you said, that the two princes in Saudi are cancers and they need to get out. We need to figure out who those cancers are and get rid of them. And then the people who are just victims are caught up, swept in, up into an evil system. That's where the truth and reconciliation should come into play.
I agree, and I really don't see the need. I mean, I get a lot of pushback from your listeners and others about hang them all and so forth. You know, in the United Kingdom, they solved this problem by sending all their convicts to Australia. And the French had desert islands, you know, Papillon. It may be that there are solutions for isolating these people and not allowing them to come in contact with small children. And we certainly need to stop the Goldman Sachs manipulation of foreign exchange rates and interest rates. We need to stop corporate import-export tax fraud. We need to, frankly, stop running the federal government on the basis of taxing the middle class and the blue-collar class and borrowing money. This is all insane. Donald Trump needs to get to an evidence-based government with a balanced budget, which does not borrow money. And we need to stop elective wars, which was one of his most fundamental campaign promises. I have the sense that Trump has cut a deal with President Vladimir Putin and General Secretary Xi Jinping. And I note with interest that the Indonesian president was present in their off-the-record meetings in Vietnam. That's because Indonesia is not only the largest Muslim nation on the planet, demographically speaking, it's also sitting on the largest store of gold on the planet. There's over 200 tunnels with captured gold that the Japanese stole, not only from the Chinese, but from the Chinese overseas community, all the way down through Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, and so forth. So this gold-backed reserve currency, based on the gold that is in the tunnels in Indonesia, as well as the gold that is in the tunnels in the Philippines. And Duterte, a lot of people don't like him. I do. And I think Trump likes him. Duterte is the real deal. The Philippines, Indonesia, and Thailand could be the triangle that leads to the Association of Southeast Asian Nations nationalizing all of the central banks in the very near future.
Wow. Okay. Well, what do you think about the black budget stuff? You know, Catherine Austin Fitz has been working with different university professors to really nail down what the black budget numbers are. I mean, I think it's probably hard to really know, but they've come up with about $41 trillion. Is it
really? Real? 41 or 21?
Well, I heard $41 trillion just recently.
That's 20,
yeah, and $21 trillion is what our debt is. Now, people are saying, you know, if you look at our balance sheet, that we get that money back and we are set. But is it realistic that we can get that money back from whoever took it?
There are three things that are realistic. Thing number one is the nationalization of the Federal Reserve as soon as possible, even if it's only a virtual nationalization in which the head of the Federal Reserve understands that they work for the people of the United States or they are going to feel a Ranger bayonet up their ass every single day. We're now there, okay? Enough already. So nationalization of the Federal Reserve and a move across the world to nationalize all central banks, period. Number two is a debt jubilee. There is absolutely no question in my mind that there is a sufficiency of evidence and need jubilee across the United States of America and ideally across all countries. The end of student debt, the end of elderly health debt, the end of small business debt, the end of family credit card debt. Just wipe it off the books. And there are different ways of doing that, including a Debt Be Gone website where Donald Trump is personally appointed as the agent of every single American in debt. And then Trump goes to the banks and says, hey, this is the deal. You either cut this debt by two-thirds or we just eliminate it entirely. And I give every single debtor in America presidential pardon. How do you like them apples, Jack?
Do you think that the people would accept that?
I think so, yes. And I also think that people would love that if we legalized marijuana and hemp at the same time. And let me not forget the third, Ellen Brown. and public banking. Ellen Brown is a global figure. Her intellect and her integrity are to be admired in a way that I can think of. I mean, she's the Mother Teresa of sensibility in today's banking world. And I think that also needs to be looked at. We need to get back to community banking, community land ownership, an end of absentee landlords, and so forth.
Well, you've been working with Bill Benny quite a bit on trying to get...
We've had lunch once a month.
Okay. Well, that's still quite a bit in today's, you know, world.
Oh, Benny and McSange are my touchstones. And Stephen Arnold of Arnold IT, he's been my virtual CTO for 20 years. He wrote the Google trilogy. He knows more about the evil in Google than anybody on the planet.
Well, I would think that Google would have a hard time keeping the evil out. And this would be a helpful, very helpful, to be able to take all these people down and clean up Google as well.
Well, I wrote the seminal article on Google Gestapo, and people can find it at tinyurl.com/ Google Gestapo. It's actually a larger system that includes the mainstream media. It includes companies like Meetup that cancel meetups from people they don't approve of and waive fees for people that they do. I mean, to take Meetup as an example, they are waiving the fees for 187 hashtag resist groups that advocate violence and impeachment of our president and are co-sponsored by the, wait for it, Anti-Defamation League, which is the Zionist censor, monitor, and digital assassin for the Zionists. Anybody who criticizes Israel or tries to bring forward facts is digitally assassinated. And the way it works is they use trolls. And I have over 400 trolls that I've clearly identified. They use trolls to report you as a hater, a spammer, or most recently, as a pornographic website, betaiota.net. It's a photo of six U.S. military personnel in uniform raping an Iraqi girl at Abu Ghraib. It's the only photo that has any kind of nudity on my website. But Kaspersky, which is a worthless piece of crap company that works for Russian intelligence and cannot be trusted because it allows Russian malware to get in through various backdoors, Kaspersky has labeled 58iota.net and rents.com as pornographic websites.
Well, that's
this
like saying
by accident.
That's
this
like saying
because X number of Zionist trolls have reported it as pornographic websites, and Kaspersky is too lazy and unethical to actually validate that.
Well, it's like saying the Pulitzer Prize-winning Vietnam picture where the girl's running out with her clothes are burned off and she's naked.
Oh, no,
naked.
No, that's completely different.
No. But it's like saying that's pornographic is what I'm saying.
It's completely different. What I'm showing you here is Kaspersky is a lazy, worthless company with an automated algorithm that can be faked out. It can be gamed by Zionist trolls. The same is true of Rolling Stone, Truthout, Slate, The Guardian, The Independent, and the United Kingdom. For example, I'm banned as a commentator on The Guardian. The same newspaper that published an article about the open source revolution by Nafiz Ahmed and me, which got 33,000 shares in 3 days and is now up to 74,000 shares. So The Guardian has an article about me as a Nobel Peace Prize kind of guy, and at the same time, it's banned me as a commentator. The reason it's banned me as a commentator is because it has a stupid automated system that has been gamed by the Zionists. So the Guardian doesn't actually mean me ill. It simply has a crap system that is gamed by the Zionists so that anyone who is critical of Israel is essentially digitally assassinated. I've also been digitally assassinated at Rolling Stone, Slate, Truthout. I'm speaking here of personal experience.
Now, do you think it's just a matter of time where they fix their algorithms and figure it out and all these publications are not involved, or do you think they're involved?
That's a very, very good question. And I think the answer is usually some of each. The influence of Zionists across the mainstream and social media, Zuckerberg, Eric Schmidt, who's an Ashkenazi Jew, the influence of Zionists across all forms of media is very considerable. The influence of Zionists in Hollywood is also quite considerable. I'm not just talking about pedophile Harvey Weinstein. Hollywood is on record as saying it wants to devalue America. It wants to wipe out our values. There's something right now going on with YouTube called ElsaGate. If you look up ElsaGate at YouTube, you will see a whole series of cartoons that essentially show children, and they've got tens of millions of views. They show children that it's okay to eat feces, eat out of a toilet bowl, urinate in the hallway, be in inappropriate relations with adults. ElsaGate.
Now, is okay. Disney involved with that then? Because that's a Disney character.
Well, if you also go back to Shirley Temple, you will find how all Shirley Temple movies were, in fact, covert pedophile movies.
Oh, geez.
Okay? There is a marvelous 15-minute summary of Shirley Temple as essentially the poster child for pedophilia. You cannot understate the information war that has been waged against American values and American sovereignty by essentially Zionists.
Well, now, do you think that there's a big diversion going on? Because there's so much happening right now. And, of course, the media isn't talking about so much. The important things the media is not talking about. The alternative media is, but the mass media is not. Like, they're not talking about these indictments. They're not talking about the fact that Las Vegas investigation is a sham.
You're not talking about the fact that Israel owns the U.S. Congress. I mean, Netanyahu thinks he's got the votes in the U.S. Congress to declare war in support of an Israeli attack on Syria and Lebanon and a Saudi Arabian attack against Iran using possibly nuclear weapons. This is insane. What Donald Trump is doing against the deep state is very, very good, but he needs to accelerate, in my view, two aspects of his triumph. The first is he needs to confront every member of Congress and give them an offer of a presidential pardon in return for giving up their blackmailers. Almost every member of Congress is not only being bribed, they're also being blackmailed. Okay? And I explicitly include Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein, as well as Chuck Schumer. The second thing that Trump needs to do is reconnect with the 99%. He is totally divorced from the American public. Half of the alt-right that voted him into power is out of touch with Donald because he has betrayed a number of promises, including no more elective wars, pulling out of NATO, and so forth. Now, he's done great things. I think he's on the verge of a major triumph. But he needs to press with the Election Reform Act in order to avoid impeachment in 2018 when the Democrats will almost assuredly take the Senate back, not just the House, unless Trump beats them to the punch with an Election Reform Act that allows the election of independents, libertarians, and Greens, which creates a swing vote, which creates an evidence-based Congress that the president can work with.
Well, what do you think about the mass media having a very targeted attack to take down Donald Trump at every turn? I mean, that's why you're saying he needs to reconnect with the 99%, because they could win this information war by how much they're targeting. I mean, everything they do is a calculated, targeted attack at taking him down.
I agree. I agree completely. And Trump has been talking about revoking broadcast licenses. There are a number of organizations, including the Washington Post and the New York Times, that are arguably in betrayal of the public trust. What Trump does not have is a public information, a public intelligence capability such as I have been proposing for 40 years, an open source agency. An open source agency would create a Trump channel that's two-way, that completely bypasses not only the mainstream media, but it eliminates Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Google. And there are surrogates, and there are alternatives. I mean, BitChute now is an excellent alternative to YouTube. GTube, less so. Presearch is coming up as an alternative to Google. There are alternatives to Twitter, Gap, and others, but they're all being isolated because Google Gestapo is being allowed to kill them. I think Trump needs to step into the social media fight, and he needs to create an alternative. And the open source agency is the fastest way to create not only an alternative for social media that is not censored and cannot be manipulated, but also an alternative for public education. He needs a fireside chat capability. And not only does he need his own fireside chat capability, we need to start doing 7-minute bit shoots on every topic, from agriculture to energy to family to health to water, and of course, security. The American public needs to be educated on the Middle East, for example, and the Congress needs to be freed from Zionist capture such that we do not declare war. We do not send troops to the Middle East. In fact, I believe Donald Trump needs to close all of our military bases, starting with the 44 that surround Iran. We need to bring our troops and their wallets home. We need to focus on America first here at home. And that's not something I see the president doing. He also needs to radically alter his health plan and his tax plan. His health plan needs to demand a price list. Did you know there's no price list for every pharmaceutical and procedure in America? It's whatever the market will bear. It's whatever corrupt arrangement they have made between the insurance companies, the hospitals, and the legislators who turn a blind eye to corruption in American health care. And at the same time, we need to be able to negotiate prices. Right now, Trump's health plan continues this no negotiation policy, which is insane. On the tax side, he needs to throw that out and implement the automated payment transaction tax, which puts the burden on all transactions, including stock and currency transactions and internal corporate transactions, which is where most of the import-export tax fraud occurs. And we need to take taxation off the back of the American public. And frankly, the last valuable thing about the automated payment transaction tax, which was invented by Dr. Edgar Feige of Wisconsin, who is still available to brief the president on this, is that the automated payment transaction tax rate is set by public ballot, which means you can't go to war unless you get the public to agree to raise that tax rate in order to finance the war.
I like that. You know, I think there's two things that need to occur no matter what. It's cleaning up the corruption, these indictments, because I don't know if we can do all these other things without cleaning that up. You know, the open source, we need open source, but we got to take down the corrupt people first. And then the other thing that you said that was so critical was the educating the people, because they're not getting the information. And I'm trying to do that, but we need a much broader thing. And you said this before in another show, that we need to fix history. We need to make sure that history is written in truth.
I love that. I absolutely love that, Sarah. You know, you ask what drives me. I am the public's first intelligence officer. And when I wrote my second book with a foreword by Senator Pat Roberts, it was called The New Craft of Intelligence, Personal, Public, and Political. All politics is local. And good politics is based on an educated public. I mean, this is something that our founding fathers understood. Worry. So let me just say, Sarah, the Office of Management and Budget has approved an open source agency twice. The first time by Sean O'Keefe, then deputy director of OMB, sitting down at dinner with Don Getzman, my friend, who was the former associate deputy director of OMB for national security. That was in 2000. The second time in 2010 when Kathleen Peroff agreed again when Joe Markowitz and I visited OMB. But I have been blocked by CIA from reaching a cabinet-level champion. Now, in this instance, I hope Donald Trump will champion the open source agency because it's the fastest route to power if combined with an election reform act and a national conversation about grand strategy. Where should America be going? Our president needs to become commander-in-chief as well as first educator. And the open source agency does that. The presidential decision memorandum is available at robertdavidsteele.com under my Nobel Peace Prize documents. It has an information bureau and an engineering bureau. The information bureau, although it's not stated there, would have a history division. Okay. People don't understand that Pearl Harbor happened because the United States declared war on the Japanese first. We did 8 covert actions against Japan specifically to incite the war. People don't realize that the Great Depression happened because Franklin Delano Roosevelt co-conspired with the banks, as you have interviewed the author of Fruits of Graft so wonderfully. People don't understand that we went to war in Iraq on the basis of 935 lives, that Dick Cheney ran 9/11. They don't understand that the Zionists own most members of Congress. They don't understand that CIA, the FBI, and NSA are blackmailing most members of Congress to protect their budget and build their budget. This is all insane. So I stand for transparency, truth, and trust, period. Like it or not, that's me.
Okay, well, let's talk about World War III. It's been heating up. There's a lot of talk on that. What do you see as a possibility for – that would be awful, but what do you see as a possibility for that?
Well, I believe that Trump has had conversations with Putin and Xi that now finally counteract Zionist lies to the president. And I believe that Benjamin Netanyahu is in a maniac fit, because he is seeing himself lose his influence over Trump, and that's a good thing. However, Netanyahu still has power over the U.S. Congress, and that is the center of gravity for preventing World War III in the Middle East. The Israelis are masters of deception. Not only do they have what we call talking rocks, where they plant rocks inside the Libyan Gaddafi's compound or inside Syrian army perimeters. These talking rocks simulate traffic, for example, Gaddafi supporting terrorism or Syrian army officers doing something which no sane Syrian army officer would ever do, saying in the clear, send me more sarin gas. I don't make this stuff up, okay? It's just the Zionists have learned just how stupid the American government is and how inept NSA is. NSA does not do well at geospatial positioning of signals. And even if it does, then the Israelis know how to blindside that or how to fake that out. The U.S. Congress is the center of gravity for a war, avoiding war in the Middle East. Now, Jim Mattis has a hard-on for Iran because he is absolutely convinced by the Long Commission and what I believe to be flawed U.S. secret intelligence support to the effect that Iran was the state sponsor of the truck bomb against the Marines. Now, I was a Marine Corps reservist and a CIA clandestine case officer at the time. In relation to U.S. funding of Israeli and Saudi Arabian terrorism across this region, a truck bomb against the Marine barracks, however reprehensible it might seem, is, in my view, a proportionate response to U.S. military misbehavior and U.S. continued funding of Zionist and Goldman Sachs predation on the Middle East. We need a clean sheet review. And I think we need to get Jim Mattis to understand that however tragic the Marine barracks may have been, it does not compare with CIA drone assassinations with a 98% kill ratio, or CIA rendition and terrorism, or Zionist genocide against the Palestinians, or U.S., Saudi, and Israeli funding of ISIS, which was just defeated by Iran, in part because the Russians came in, the Turkish toned down their tolerance of ISIS smuggling, and Donald Trump, God bless him, withdrew U.S. logistical training support for ISIS. ISIS was created by the U.S., Saudi Arabia, and Israel. So war in the Middle East, in my view, is going to happen unless Donald Trump defeats the deep state, including the gutting of the Zionist control of the U.S. Congress. And in order to be most successful over the holiday period, in my view, Donald Trump needs to create the open source agency and begin educating the American public directly.
Well, folks, I'd like to thank you for all listening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We just played a few clips tonight, and we'll be back on later this weekend. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.